Welcome back to the Magic of Transformation podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Zeller. So I have a real treat and an exciting announcement for you today. This podcast episode is brought to you by my new podcast with my new co-host, Davin Youngs. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that there have been two episodes with Davin and I, one where he interviewed me and another where I interviewed him. The one where I interviewed him was put out very, very recently, and I have received so much positive feedback for both of those episodes that Davin and I have decided to start our own podcast. This podcast is called Conversations on Expansion with Stephanie Zeller and Davin Youngs. So today I'm giving you a little sneak peek at a very poignant and I think powerful conversation between the two of us. But be sure to search that podcast wherever you are listening and follow it, because I will not be dropping every episode from that podcast onto this one. There should be links in the show notes below for Conversations on Expansion, and you can find all of my offerings, my courses and coaching at thetransformationschool.com. I'm very, very excited to be sharing this episode with you today. So without further ado, enjoy this episode with me and my new co-host, Davin Youngs.
There's this aspect to who you are as a person that I find compelling and fascinating. And I was wondering if we could unpack it just a little bit. And maybe you see yourself differently than I see you in this regard too. But I witness you as someone who is willing historically and currently to make pretty significant shifts in your life that to the average Joe would feel quite dramatic, and also engage sort of significant processes around cultivating this change. So when I first got to know you, it felt like every time I met with you, you were telling me about some like ceremony or ritual or book or process or challenge that you were engaging to sort of, I don't know, cultivate a new level of growth. And I always found this fascinating and compelling because it seemed like you have like a certain level of discipline in this area that I don't know that I have strategically, or that I don't do strategically in my life. So I was wondering, first, is that how you've always been?
The making significant changes or the processes around them, or both?
Both.
Yeah, I think so, probably. But the process around it has gotten more intense since I discovered that that's a particular gift of mine, to create kind of a process around things, like to get from A to B. I don't know that growing up, I realized that I could come up with a process to achieve transformation or achieve a change or to achieve a manifestation or something like that. But I would say the big shifts became more prevalent in my 20s and less so before that.
Okay. So what happened in your 20s that like spurred that?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I hit a tipping point of being so, it was like I couldn't self-abandon anymore. I'd become so disconnected from, I think, my truth, that feeling was so terrible. And then when I would start to experiment with following my intuition and feeling a relief of tension and a relief of dis-ease, even if what my intuition was guiding me to do was insane, it was better to experience that sort of feeling of falling out of an airplane with an insane decision than it was to be in conflict with myself. Like, that feeling became terrible.
Do you remember, like, is there a tipping point experience where you made that choice and that like you started to recognize that like stepping into that risk felt better?
Well, I think that with my first marriage, I took a big leap with that because my intuition was telling me that I should get married, but my parents were very, very against it. They didn't want me to get married. They thought it was too young. So I got married at 21.
Yeah.
And That was, I think that was a big shift. I started making those shifts and listening to myself, I think, once I got out of the house of my parents, because I could just hear my own voice more. And I started following my intuition more. At the same time, I was still, I would say, like probably 50, 60% of the time gaslighting myself. Because when you grow up being gaslit, you take on that inner voice of gaslighting. And anytime I felt a difficult emotion, I was convincing myself out of it. Anytime my body was saying, like, this doesn't feel right, I was convincing myself it should feel right. Just all the things, I wasn't listening to my body at all. And then I actually think it was getting divorced from that marriage that really shifted things in terms of trusting my intuition. And all of the big leaps that I've taken, which there have been an abnormal amount.
Unusual.
There have been an, yeah, I guess an unusual amount, comparatively. I just have all come from my intuition. And there's a, I think there's just something in me that has become like, I absolutely refuse to self-abandon again. And I found, like, now after thousands of times, small and big leaps, that I always ultimately feel better when I follow it. Like 100% of the time, there's literally not one time that I didn't feel better on the other side of following my intuition. Yes, like sometimes following my intuition will mean there's a fallout of something or there's difficulty up front. But I'm always so trusting that that's what I need to get to more joy on the other side. And then it happens like 100% of the time. So it's like if you have an inner guide like that, which everyone does, if you have an inner guide like that, that you know 100% of the time has your best interest and knows you better than you know yourself, why wouldn't you follow that?
I think that there's like a, what you just said a few moments ago, you're like, even if it felt insane or crazy, like that's what I witness in you is a capacity to still move forward. With that, with, and I think that that's, I inevitably that has increased over time, and that you are willing to both move forward, but also sort of like support it with processes, like with, and that feels really to me, there's a certain level of discipline within that that I think is really compelling to watch, where I'm like, people talk about doing the quote unquote work, and I'm like, you should see what Stephanie does. It's like people are like, I went to therapy and I took a bath, and I'm like, she's burning shit in her backyard. So, no, I'm just teasing a little bit, but I think there's
A little
something.
bit, yeah. I mean, I was doing that in LA. I mean, let's say in a very safe way.
In a container, say
Yeah.
fireproof container. But yeah, but I really admire that in you, and I think that it's also, there is this attitude that it has cultivated within you that has, I'm just like curious to see how you feel in that now. Like, does that, like, do you feel as bold as you look?
I will say, like, a common problem that I have is that, and I've always had this problem, is that when I reach some sort of an emotional breaking point and I tell someone and I'll be like, I've been really struggling with this for a few weeks, they will tell me they had absolutely no idea and that it did not appear to them that I was struggling with anything at all. And I mean, I think that was originally for two reasons, one of which is that I didn't grow up in an environment where I was taught how to feel and process my emotions and how to ask for help. So I just learned how to take care of it myself. That was one thing. But the other, I think, is that I think there is some sort of an energy that's coming off around like a fearlessness, or she's got her shit together, or she'll figure it out, or she doesn't need the assistance because she has it. And I will interestingly say, in the last couple of years, I have really cultivated that in myself, this energy of like, I've got you. for me. And I think that that's, I think everybody can cultivate that. Ultimately, that sort of I've got you energy, and it's something that I work with my clients a lot on in terms of how to cultivate that in themselves. Not that we shouldn't ask for help, but there's a different level of confidence and boldness that comes when you know that you've got yourself.
Yeah, there's that man that you're just making me think. I often that catch 22 of we are nothing if not in community and supported by others. Like that is such an essential part of survival as a human. And yet at the same time, there's this reality that no one will ultimately be able to be there for you in the ways in which you want them to.
I love that you brought that up because that is actually something that's been revealed to me in the last year, is that it's actually not a paradox. Like the it's like the whole know thyself. The deeper that I've gone into devotion to myself, the more I've felt unity with others. And so the more that I have actually felt like I've got myself and I've honored myself and I've not self-abandoned, and I mean, really, devotion is the word. Like, the more I've just been devoted to myself, the more I've truly felt connected. Like, I will sometimes not, if I'm just working at home here in Austin and I go out and I don't see anyone in a day, that used to make me feel isolated. Like, oh, I at least have to go to the store and like be around people. But now it's like I feel it in my body. I feel a oneness with everyone in my body. So even if I'm not directly in community, I feel a sense of community that I didn't get from actual community. I got from going deeper into myself.
I experienced that too, like that there's this I think, well, I think some of this comes down to what you're expecting or needing of others in terms of support, or like if you're going through something, right? Because I think what I'm was maybe trying to express is that people will disappoint you, right? Like that there's not this, no one's going to say exactly what you need. No one's going to touch you in the exact right way. And you learn this as you lose people throughout time. Like you learn that you always were alone and that is the path to interconnectedness. Like in one of the things that you're saying too, is something that I've embraced a lot more in my current life is solitude. Like solitude feels really important to me because it feels like my path to deeper connection. If I don't have that, and actually I'll even say as a musician, lately, I have like been spending a lot of time not listening to any music or any podcasts. I just kind of am in my car in the quiet or in my studio in the quiet. Like I'm really feeling aware of my need to shut off the noise so that I can be within. And there is this advantage that you're saying that comes with that, where it's there's a self-assuredness that then when you actually do go into relationship, like actual in-person relationship, you don't need from the other person something that they never could have given you to begin with. And that fosters a deeper connection. Does that make sense?
I mean, the way that I think about it is when I spend more time alone, particularly away from media, because I could be alone all day, but then be on my phone
Yes, right.
and it won't feel like solitude. But when I get quiet, I hear myself more. And that energy starts to fill up the space, and that creates a sense of connection. And then it makes you less needy when you go into relationship. And then when you're less needy, you can receive in a whole different way. Because it's not a I need, it's like a I get to enjoy you. And also, I think what you're saying though too is so foreign to so many people in terms of that is not something that most people do, is get quiet.
Well, it's scary in there for a lot of folks, you
Yeah,
know.
it's uncomfortable. Yeah.
For good reason. You know, I always think like it's actually that's the thing, like even our phone and all these devices, they have been designed specifically to, you know, drown out our inner dialogue and drown out the noise that we're uncomfortable listening to.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, you know, to just take us back a little bit, like I think that's kind of what I see in you is a willingness to engage that, particularly around things that don't make sense, like you know, like moving or Ending a well-paying job, or starting a career that doesn't seem practical, or like there are all these ways in which I know that you've walked the walk, and that I've done some of too, that it is it does require a certain level of self-assuredness that can feel really risky at first, especially at first when you're doing. I think about for a lot of folks, like this. One of the most obvious places that they'll encounter these sort of inclinations, but also the unwillingness to change, is their work. And I always think, like, I grew up with my parents were quite a bit older when they had me, and my mom specifically, didn't understand why anyone would leave a job if they had a job. Like, that was very much the message, like, you've got a job, stay there. That's like your only goal is just to stay in that job. And early on I was like, well, I'm not happy, so why wouldn't I try to go to another job? But I remember thinking that, like, I had really explicitly been given that narrative that it was risky just to even leave a job. So that first job that I left, it was with no sort of support. Like, I had to do it just because I felt inclined to do it. And that at the time, that felt like a big deal. Now, ironically, it wasn't at all. Like, we're talking about really low paying salary, but as an early 20 something, that felt like my livelihood was at stake in doing that. And so that's a big, in my mind, like a big risk that I took early on that was so counter to the narrative that I was given, but was really honoring that sense of self within. And then momentum grows around that, my experience.
And I like that you brought that forward too, because I think sometimes people have an intuition. I mean, I see this in my clients all the time, where they have an intuition to do something, and maybe actually to other people, it doesn't sound insane. But to them, it's counter to one of their narratives or their belief structures growing up. And so it feels insane in their body. And in fact, they could even say, yeah, this is logical. I know this is logical. But there's still a nervous system response that they're having difficulty overcoming. I mean, a lot of what I tell them to do is like start smaller then, and like you're saying, like start building momentum. But I mean, to bring it back to the processes around things, like I think that, well, before I say that, something that has come to me is when I make big choices or insane choices, because I have made so many that many people have told me were insane. I feel supported metaphysically. Like I feel like if my intuition is guiding me to do this, I'm going to be supported all the way. And it doesn't make it less hard sometimes. But I think without that, if I didn't have a connection to my intuition, and I was just kind of trying to make decisions like, okay, is this a right or wrong decision? I'm going to make like my pro con list, and I'm going to like talk to everyone I know, and I'm going to try and figure it out. It would be 100,000 times harder to make bold choices, because who the fuck knows how that's going to turn out? Like, who knows how that's going to turn out?
Are you familiar with Ellen Langer? She has this book called A Mindful Body. She's a researcher out of Harvard, but she's kind of on the podcast circuit these days. She's very entertaining to listen to. She's done all this research on, like, basically like on mindfulness, but she doesn't talk about it in terms of meditation. It's just about like awareness, essentially. But one of her hallmarks of her work is around decision making and mindful awareness and decision making. And one of the things that she said is there are no right decisions. There are only decisions that you make right. And I think about that a lot because she said basically we're all collecting data all the time to support what we already know that we want. And it never ultimately will make sense to everyone else. Like, people all the time, and we walk around believing that we're rational. Like, if I could just gather, like if I could get this study, or if I could get this thing. And the bottom line is it's really more of a sliding doors situation, Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, it's really like that decision, it can really change your life. It can really point you in a different direction, but it also has a lot to do with your ability to take ownership over the decision or the change that you've made. And it's not like make the best of a bad situation, but really take ownership that you made the decision for a reason, because it was something within you that thought it was the right decision, even if it seemed fundamentally crazy or insane or wrong to other people. And basically, one of the things that she sort of offers is that we spend way too much time trying to gather data. Because when we're gathering data, what we're doing is we're just trying to reinforce what we already know and believe. That might be important for people as a part of their process, but it's generally not as influential as we like to convince ourselves that it is. We often already have the instinct, the knowing within us that's going to be the right decision for us. So I've been trying to give myself permission to, follow that more, which I think is what you're referring to when you're talking about intuition. Similarly, that follow that urge, that instinct, that nudge, that ping, that ring, even if it feels pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's interesting when you say gathering data, because I actually see people gathering data, especially when your intuition is telling you to do something that is opposite of what your logical mind thinks. I see people trying to gather data. At first, it seems like okay, I'm just exploring what other people think. And then it seems like people are going one way or the other. They're trying to either gather data to convince themselves that it's okay to ignore their intuition
Yes,
and to
right.
go with logic, or they're trying to trust their intuition, but they're really scared. So they're trying to gather data and have other people give them permission and tell them it's okay to follow their intuition. And my partner always jokes with me because, like, whenever he asks my opinion on anything, like, I never ever give him my opinion. I'm just like, well, what does your intuition say? And so sometimes he'll even, like, he'll ask my opinion
Annoying.
because it, who gives a shit what I think? You know what I mean? Like, no, ultimately, again, just everyone's intuition has so much more information than we could even gather. It's like picking up on the energy of things, cues. It's picking up on our path of greatest expansion. It's picking up on what we really want to manifest rather than what we think we want to manifest. It's just picking up on so much more. And that's what's informing our intuitive decision, you
Do you
know?
think there's an argument that if I'm gathering data to support not making the change, that that is my clue that I'm not ready for the change? Like, is that inclination, is that, I mean, I suppose, like, as I'm saying this, there's probably a difference between like just the habit of the response versus like a skillful engagement. But I do think, like, obviously readiness is an important part of this. And that's where I, like, again, I look at you and I think about some of the things. I'm like, man, the reason that they felt insane, or they would feel insane to a lot of people, is because they'd be like, I'd never gonna be ready to do that. Yeah, anyway, I don't know. Does that make sense?
It's my belief that if intuition is guiding someone to do something, that they're ready.
Interesting. Yeah.
That because again, like, intuition is our direct line to consciousness. And I don't believe that consciousness would fuck with us in that way. It's like, or you could say, or love, right? Or God, or however anyone wants to think of that. But it's like, now, I think sometimes it can be a both and. It can be a, oh, my intuition's guiding me to do something. And maybe intuition knows full well that you won't be able to do it right away. And it's a slow, okay, well, that's fine. Like a loving, like, okay, this person has an intuition to do something, is too afraid, doesn't follow that intuition. That's fine because intuition is going to keep guiding you to do it again and
Right.
again and again. And you're going to have so many experiences where you're going to get burned by not following it, that
Yeah.
eventually the pain is going to outweigh the fear of change and you will follow,
Yeah. It's
you
actually
know?
like taking me back to what we were talking about a little bit ago. When you get quiet with yourself, the real danger in that is that you are going to get that first ping. Because when you get that
Yes.
first ping, it's like
I love that
that.
you say, it's so interesting that you say danger.
Well, I mean it, because it's like, because then you're going to have to change. Right? Like, or you don't have to, but you're gonna feel that perpetual urge, that itch, that discomfort. Because I do think of it as like, it's perceived danger, right? It's perceived
Yeah.
threat, which goes into like the nervous system and stuff. But that is, I just there, and I could wax poetic on this for a long time, but that's a lot of times why I think people don't pursue things that make them feel good in general, because they actually don't even want to know that, because then that would potentially inspire having to extricate themselves from all the shitty situations in their lives,
Yes.
you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I've had people start working with me and then stop because they recognize like, okay, I'm
Yes.
actually not living authentically at all, but I don't want to change anything. I like if I were to be authentic, people in my life, they think wouldn't like them.
Yeah. I have a story along those lines, really briefly, that so in my voice coaching work, I worked with someone who was a very successful, what we call studio musician, studio singer. And they don't exist anymore, but it used to be back in the day that there were these people that would just like, you would hire to come in and like do the background vocals or whatever. And they would come in and they'd be able to knock it out really fast. And so this person did that for a number of really big bands like the Beach Boys. And anyway, long story short, they had a bunch of health problems. They ended up having to have thyroid surgery, thyroid removed. And that is very significant when it comes to the voice, because the thyroid takes up a significant amount of space around the larynx, and it's a really, really big shift. And that person had never taken voice lessons or any sort of voice coaching. In fact, a very famous musician who maybe was the lead singer of the Beach Boys told this person, "Don't ever go to a voice teacher, they'll fuck your voice up." So anyway, they have surgery, really distorts their relationship to their instrument. The doctor said, "Hey, you should really go work with a voice teacher, voice coach." They worked with me. It was such a sort of like a harrowing experience for me, because I felt really sympathetic to this person's experience, and I felt really clear that I could help them, and they felt really excited in our first session, like thrilled at what was possible. Then they felt really good in the second session, and then they bounced. And I think that it taps into what it is that we were talking about. I've always thought about this, because it was going to, A, there was a certain level of work that was evident really quickly that was going to need to be done. And that felt totally overwhelming, especially in light of the fact that they had spent all this time being financially successful and career-wise successful. But now the circumstances had shifted, and that change felt so scary and overwhelming that I think they just weren't willing to do it and bounced on the whole thing. And I always like hold this person in my heart, because I felt really sympathetic to that overwhelm, and also personally disappointed that we weren't able to, you know, turn the dial in a way that I knew that we could. But I think that often happens, where people, they touch the fire and then they're like, "Oh, it is actually hot."
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, how are you willing to move forward in light of that?
Right. And I think that is where people like you and I come in. I mean, you having a process, like it's not like, I mean, you were going to take him through a process, right? That's where in my work, coming up with processes and like that's, and all my courses are just essentially a series of different processes to help people achieve the transformation or find what they're looking for and all of that. And I think that without, when I think back to trying to make the big decisions that I used to make without that structure in place, it was harder because if you try to take a really big leap and then you don't have something to support the leap,
Yeah.
it can feel so chaotic that you can feel, it feels like you lose yourself in it. Sometimes that's the point. Sometimes you're supposed to lose yourself so that you can find your new self on the other side. But I think having anchors of certain practices, I guess you could say, have been really beneficial for me in making those big decisions. I think it's like I know that any big decision requires a transformation, and because I've become an expert at transform, like just process of transformation, I'm always just thinking, okay, what do I need to facilitate this transformation, facilitate it as fast as possible. And a lot of times, honestly, that's to move away from suffering. It's like to move out of whatever I'm experiencing that feels unpleasant.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of the crazy thing, though, too, is like people don't transform because they don't want to, like, oh, they're like, oh, this is fire. Like, this feels like fire, right? But they're already suffering. Like
I know.
him, for instance, like
I
now
know.
he's like,
I
now he
know.
just doesn't have a relationship with his voice anymore.
I know. Yeah, it's super sad. It's really sad, because it felt like a missed opportunity. And it also, I feel like there's this, it's an ego death thing, where like, even though it was like confronting the reality of what it was going to take to step into this new self, was like, so overwhelming because it meant giving one had to give up the old self, even though the old self had already been given up in that surgery that happened. You know, it's like, no, this is who you are now. This is your reality now. But people are, and we are, I could say that, you know, humans are often married to their discomfort. Like it feels very identity driven. It can feel very egoic to be like, I'm someone that suffers. I was out to dinner recently with a friend, and I just was really struggling in the conversation because the friend was conveying to me circumstances that were legitimately challenging, and I wanted to be, a good ally to them in the midst of the situation. And then also there was a point in the conversation where I recognized that the point of the conversation was not to do anything other than to keep reiterating how hard it was, and that can be really challenging if you're not someone who, like, that's not generally how I'm trying to move through the world. And so figuring out how to be supportive for someone that isn't really interested in having a, they're so connected to the struggle and the turmoil and the suffering, their identity feels connected to it. It's like, yeah, I don't have anything to offer in light of that. That feels really hard.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between holding space for someone that is, I mean, well, somebody might be looking for a solution in a conversation like that, or they might just be looking to actually process,
Yes.
right? And so it's like it's easy to hold space, or I find it pretty easy to hold space for someone when I feel like what they're doing is really actually trying to move through it and process. But I think what most or so many people do is they're not doing that. They're
Yes.
just ruminating, and every time they speak it out loud, reinforcing their own story and their own identity in that suffering. And for me personally, I don't have relationships with people like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think that was my real struggle in the moment is I was like, I don't know how to connect with you right now in
Right.
a way that feels supportive for both of us. Cause it's like the, I think cause I want to be really clear that I like what you're saying. I do have the capacity to sit with someone in their suffering who needs to process, who needs
Right.
to be held, who just needs to be listened to. Like that's one of the biggest gifts that we can possibly give another human being is just to sit and listen to them. But there is this complicated part about being human that can tip quickly into rumination. Like that can tip quickly into just like the way I think about it is like sanding a groove in a piece of wood. It's like just keeps getting sanded deeper and deeper rather than trying to flatten out the board. And once you recognize that possibility within your own life or those habits and patterns and start to change that, it feels really difficult to watch others continue to get deeper and deeper into that groove. And so, yeah, there does have to be different boundaries in those kinds of relationships, or they might not be able to continue on. I have a question about regret, because I think that this is something I think it's kind of commonplace to hear people say, well, I don't have any regrets. It's sort of a common phrase, but as someone who has had some whatever radical shifts, and maybe taking them in times that you couldn't make sense of them, is regret something that you've experienced?
Well, first of all, that's interesting. Do you hear a lot of people say they don't have regrets? Is that a common thing you hear?
I feel like it's like a thing that people say because they think they're supposed to say,
Okay.
right? It's like no, I don't, life works out, I don't regret anything, you know, like all my decisions. But I'm thinking about the actual experience of making these big shifts. Because I can say I have a regret.
Oh, is really?
Yes, a very specific one. Well,
You want to share it?
I don't want to. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't want to. I don't want to. I don't want to. I wanted to. I don't want to direct your response,
You
but
don't want to prime me.
yeah.
I guess this is going to sound a little esoteric, but I guess the way that I've come to look at myself is like consciousness experiencing the world through Stephanie.
Okay.
And just like consciousness is trying to experience the world through Davin and every living being. And there's so many things that influence us, especially on our journey of awakening. Before we start to awaken, I mean, we're all acting automatically. So I feel like whenever we make any decision, we're making at the level of consciousness, that the level of awareness that we're at in that moment.
Yeah.
So I think it's easy sometimes when we continue to evolve and we look back and we think, oh, I should have decided differently. But at that point, we were just at the level of awareness that we were at. And I think here's the thing. I used to live with a tremendous amount of regret, actually. And there was a point in time of like 5 or 6 years ago where I forgot that I used to live like that. I was actually coaching a group of people and they were talking about like how they were having difficulty having self-love and have, and there was just like a lot of self-hatred going on in the group. And I was thinking about how I didn't struggle with that. I was like, oh, I don't really relate to that. I don't. But then I was listening to a teacher talk about A Course in Miracles and about forgiveness. The course's definition of forgiveness is just a shift in perspective. And there was something in there when she was talking that I suddenly had this remembering. And the reason I preface it by saying I forgot is that's how much we can heal. But I had this sudden remembering that I used to fucking hate myself. And I used to just blame myself for everything. Like anytime anyone in my family suffered growing up, I thought it was my fault. Anytime anyone around me was suffering, I thought it was my fault. And so I used to have regret about like everything. I mean, just, but then I think the more that I started to actually awaken and move out of, and I first of all, just learning about automatic responses, learning that, oh, the reason I make these decisions and have these behaviors is because it's literally what I was taught to have, where I'm just avoiding suffering and I don't know another way. And then when I started realizing that I had power to change those beliefs and change those behaviors, everything shifted in terms of I suddenly felt like I had more power. And then at the same time, I was growing my connection with my intuition and I started following that more. And so, like I would say any decision I've ever made following my intuition, I've never regretted. But also, I'm at a point now where any decision that I've, let's say, accidentally made that wasn't in alignment with my intuition, like for now, honestly, that may be like, I guess you could say small things like if I eat a meal that I didn't really check with my intuition if I should eat it right now. Like, or it was feeling like, oh, I kind of knew I shouldn't eat that meal. Like I can have like a tinge of like, oh, okay. But I, instead of like, there's no like self, usually when I think of regret, I think of like the self-hatred I used to have with regret. And it would weigh heavily on me. Whereas now I look at it as, and it's always a lesson. It's always just like a, okay, like that has informed me now for the future.
Yeah, it's like there's a neutrality to that, or equanimity. Yeah, I think about like, because I also can say that I don't struggle with self-hatred, but as you were saying that, I also caught glimpses recently of when I've blamed myself for things. And there is sort of a subtle aggression or harmfulness in that attitude toward oneself that's like, oh, okay, Devin, like I think I'm generally pretty good and easy on myself, but I'm like, oh, maybe there's some growth there. But okay, so my specific regret is that I regret getting a master's degree. And the reason I did it, I worked for a university administratively, and everyone kept telling me, there's money on the table. And the problem is, there wasn't like a, because it was like a tuition reimbursement sort of thing. And the problem with it was, is that there wasn't even like a program that I wanted to do. So I did this, like, I have a master's of arts and in interdisciplinary studies, which I jokingly called my choose your own adventure degree. And I didn't need to do it. Shouldn't have done
But why do
it.
you still regret that?
Well, and this is what I'm going to say is that what you were just saying, what I recognize is I regret the fact that I didn't follow what I knew in the moment, because the reason it stands out to me is it was a big ass commitment.
Yeah.
Like, it was a lot of time, a lot of energy, and the whole time, there was never once during that I was like, yeah, this feels great. Like, I love this. I keep doing this. But it was also at a season of my life where that was reflected in a lot of different areas of my life, where I was just really struggling to honor myself, honor my truth, honor my intuition, honor my deeper knowing. And but for whatever reason, that piece of paper, like, that feels like a monumental symbol of where I was struggling to grow during that time. Now, I don't hold this against myself. When I use the word regret, maybe it has like a different meaning for different folks. Because what I heard you saying earlier with regards to like your co group coaching is a lot of like shame and guilt.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily feel that around those things, but I do see that clearly as like having made a big choice, really stuck it out, like did it. I did the thing, and like the whole thing about it was not ever aligned,
Yeah.
with who I was or striving to be. So anyway, it's just like an interesting sort of thought experiment.
I mean, I have many things I've done that weren't aligned.
Yeah. Apparently
I
some
mean,
meals. I was like, when you were saying that, I was like, I think I feel that way after I eat every time. I'm like,
I, you know,
maybe I
I'm
shouldn't
too.
have.
I'm my goal is to not is literally not to do anything in a day that is not guided by my intuition. And like my intuitive guidance now is such that I'm not necessarily having to pause and ask. Like I'm just flowing, right? Like I just know, okay, now I'm gonna go do this. Now I'm gonna go do this. Sometimes it is a little bit more if I've been like on my phone a lot, or if I just had like kind of an icky conversation with someone, or like things like that will disconnect me from it, and then I may have to pause and ask, like, hold on, is this aligned for me to do this? But that's, you know, the last few years, right? Like before that, I mean, there were just loads of relationships and all different kinds of relationships, romantic and otherwise, a lot of friendships, family relationships, hanging out with people when it wasn't actually aligned for me to be hanging out with people. I mean, so many things that made me feel terrible inside. Right. And I think the release of those has been through a lot of the inner work that I've done. And now, weirdly, a lot of it doesn't feel like it was me. Like I feel, it feels so neutral, I guess, that it just doesn't feel like it was me. And at the same time, that burn that you're talking about like thinking back to, wow, that was a long time. That was such a huge commitment. And that was like not aligned the whole time. I think when we can realize that we've done things and really internalize that feeling, I think there's utility to that because we can, if we can integrate that, it can then direct us towards not doing that again.
I think what I'm ultimately, in some ways, trying to get at is sometimes I think regret is useful in that there is, and again, like we could talk semantics here. So hopefully, you can hear what I'm saying in terms of what it is that I'm trying to communicate. But there is like a looking back and like owning of the circumstance and seeing the ways in which it wasn't aligned, which is the useful lesson. Because a lot of those lessons, they only come with time, right? Like when you get enough space beyond the thing that you can see it clearly. And that's when you recognize, like, oh, that wasn't actually me being me. And that's where I think I'm also connecting with you, being like, that feels like someone else. I mean, literally, if I think about myself sitting in those classrooms, I'm like,
For
what are
sure.
you doing? Like, who was
Who
doing
was that? Yeah.
that?
No, I 100% agree. And I think people don't do it enough. Or if they do, they're keeping it low key. It's like they know that a decision wasn't aligned and that they shouldn't have done something. But like, it's also so uncomfortable for them to think about it that they just put it off and they just like ignore that. But the problem with that, which is what you're alluding to, is like, then you end up just repeating it. In different forms. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective of regret then. Like
But I think like this is like a big the reason I'm bringing it up in this conversation is I think it is maybe an important component of being able to make significant shifts and changes in your life that feel radical and real is you also have to be able to look back at the times that you didn't, or
yeah.
you have to be able to reflect. I shouldn't use that language. It's useful to be able to reflect back and see things clearly and with some level of neutrality around it, with not like with not a whip with yourself, self-flagellation around like, you idiot, why would you do that stupid thing? It's like, oh no, that wasn't aligned. Like that wasn't right. That wasn't who you are, who you wanted to be. And that then can really inspire the change and the momentum or moving forward or engaging some of the practices like you do to continue to foster growth in your ability and your capacity to do that more in your life.
Well, and that ties back to the first question you asked me, which was like, what was the tipping point for you to start trusting yourself more? And it was the burn of regret. Like it was, I'm so tired of, and to me, I think, although I wouldn't have used these words at the time, it was, I'm so tired of self-abandoning. Like, this is not fucking working.
Can you say more about I think that term self-abandonment, can you say just say more about that? What is that?
It's when you have a either a sense of something that you should or shouldn't do, or there's a feeling coming up in your body and you ignore it and you don't follow, you don't honor what your body is telling you. You don't honor your the sort of whisper. And I mean, I think this is a tricky thing for a lot of people because like when I first start working with people in my intuition course, a lot of them will say like, well, I have these like whispers, but I don't, to me, sometimes they sound crazy or they sound insane or they don't make sense. Like that's a big one. Like they don't make sense. So they think it's just coming out of nowhere. It's just like a stupid thought or a weird idea.
Easy to discount.
Yeah. But the part of them that's discounting that or discounting like, you know what? It doesn't feel good when I hang out with this person. Like I leave this conversation feeling icky, or I don't like that this person is just always talking shit on other people, or like it just feels, but then you somehow default to, well, they've been my friend for 10 years though. And like, so I like obviously, or like, well, they're my sister. So like obviously I have to maintain a relationship, or like, well, they've been working in my office for 20 years. So obviously, like, and there's these just defaults that we go to when that is actually self-abandoning because there's a deeper part of self that is saying, hey, like this actually isn't right. This doesn't feel good. There's something off here. And you're ignoring that because there's all these defaults in place.
And you're making me think that the radical act of love, that the way that any of us would want to be loved is to have someone accept all the parts of us, like all of the the honor, even if it is crazy, but at least honor that it's me, right?
Yes.
Someone that can sit with you. That's what I was saying earlier. It's like when you are struggling, someone that can just sit and listen and affirm that you're good, that is so powerful. But we really struggle so often to do that to ourselves, I love when I work with someone who has kids, because I always think that that's like one of the best reminders of if a little kid came up to you and they'd be like, there's a ghost, it's easy. It happens to all of us where someone's like, there's no ghost, get on. But like a really loving parent would be like, where do you think you see that? What do you think that actually is? Or whatever. Like, tell me more.
Or
It's
it
like,
could literally be a ghost.
right? Like, yes, but like, tell me,
Yeah.
like, help me get to know what it is. And
Yes.
that's like the most loving thing that you could offer. I'm reading Martha Beck's new book,
Yes, I just bought it.
The
Thank
Beyond
you.
Anxiety. It's great. It's great. But she talks about, it's not her idea, and apologies that I don't remember the person that she's referencing, but she talks about like this idea that a tool for parenting is to imagine a field of benches, and that each bench is for a different emotion. It could be anger, it could be frustration, it could be anxiety, fear, whatever. And then you imagine that whatever emotion that your kid is in the midst of, that you're just going to go sit with them on that bench. And I was just thinking to myself, like, would I just go sit with myself on that bench? Like the beauty of being able to just like let myself be exactly where I am, because then, there's a sort of an ability to get up and walk and move forward, but you got to sit on that bench first. And I think like that's so much of what you're talking about when you're talking about the self-abandonment, the unwillingness to sit with yourself on the bench and honor, because the other bench could be joy, the other bench could be playfulness, the other bench could be curiosity. It's not exclusively negative, but there is a capacity that we have to cultivate to be able to sit on any of the benches.
Yes. In the last, like, I would say 18 months, I've had a tremendous amount of like inner joy and self-love that has blossomed because I've been relentless to do that, to like every part of me that rises up, I show so much devotion to and sit with. in just that way, like literally, like using the internal family systems framework, which Martha Beck references a lot in Beyond Anxiety, but like using that framework, because that's the main framework that I use. Like I will call that part forward of me, like visually in my mind, and ask that part what it needs, and sit with that part, and really be with that part. And the thing in those moments where that like a part is rising up in us, or our truth is rising up in us, and then we immediately negate it, ignore it, shut it down, say it's ridiculous. That voice is a voice that we heard at some point. Like it was someone else in our real life when we were a child. It was like either a caretaker, a coach,
Teacher.
a mentor, a friend, a sibling, somebody that repeatedly told us like that's ridiculous. Or and so we like, okay, I guess that's ridiculous. And we internalize that, and then that becomes our voice. And we start, getting pissed at ourselves. And, like I hear my clients do this all the time, be like, and I was telling myself, like, you just need to shut up, and like, what's wrong with you? And it's like, that is not, let's not talk to ourselves that way. But it's not like, I think sometimes when we hear like self-love out in the world, like, oh, show yourself some love. To me, that seems so just, that's so surface. And it's not like taking a bubble bath is not going to solve your problems, but it's really sitting in those moments with, wait, hold on, like pausing and being like, wait, what was that thought? Like, exactly like you're saying with like the benches. It's like, what was that thought? What is this feeling? If I feel uncomfortable with this person, why? Like honoring that. And I think that I didn't, even though I was following my intuition, I've always kind of followed my intuition to a degree from a young age. But like, yeah, there was a moment in my 20s where I was suffering so much. And then I realized I'm not even listening to myself. Like I've been miserable for so long. And I convinced myself to stay in this marriage. And I convinced myself, I'm like, it's like all this stuff.
I also think too, those voices that we hear that aren't ours, that are basically always critical, a lot of times, those aren't even specific situations where something has happened. It's sort of been the implied message of the situation, which happens, which is like can become like the cultural narrative. So, for instance, my story of being like a queer kid in a small town with a father for a minister, a lot of times no one said anything explicitly to me, but it was just the
The
implied
tone,
cultural
yeah.
narrative, and in some ways that's more insidious, and it's actually like even worse because your story can be really outlandish in your mind because no one's even given you the actual parameters of it. Like you can end up as a small child sort of assuming worst case scenario, and then that becomes how a governing force and how you're making choices and decisions. I mean, my mom, I said that story earlier about my mom with work. Like my mom grew up incredibly poor. I mean, like legitimately one room schoolhouse situation, one pair of shoes a year, all of the siblings took bath in the same bath water, that kind of a situation. So in the context of her life, like I totally understand her POV and why she would say the things, but it wasn't in any way close to my actual lived reality that I was in. And so starting to have the discernment, it really does start with actually having honest conversations with yourself and being able to sit and listen to yourself, because otherwise you will default to the strongest narratives that you've been given. And so often they're not based in your reality. They're projections. They're projections of other people's experiences.
So over the last few years, from especially the very beginning of me working with you, I've seen you take a lot bigger, bolder, like risk and choices. Because I actually remember a conversation you and I had initially when we were first starting. And you were, I was kind of, I always laugh now because like I'm just picturing your face sometimes when I would tell you like all the things I'm doing and like, to change myself. And you would just be like, wow, what the fuck? That's a lot of stuff. And I remember at one point saying, like, yeah, I'm like always pushing myself out of my comfort zone. And then I was like, aren't you? And you were like, no.
It's true.
And I was like, oh, and that was good for me to hear because I think I have had this default of thinking everyone's doing the same thing that I'm doing and everyone's just like me, right? But with that said, I actually have seen you do that a lot in the last couple of years. So what instigated that shift for you to start pushing yourself more and more out of your comfort zone and take, because I mean, somebody could say like, oh, why rock the boat? You have this coaching business and like, why do all this other stuff now that you're doing, like being on stages?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I want to say a couple of things before I answer that. And one is that I'm going to give you like an example from a voice lesson that hopefully will communicate what I was trying to communicate to you, or observing, or witnessing, or trying to learn more about you. And so when one sings well, they need to be flexible and free in their body. So often when I have someone singing, I might ask them to move their body while they sing. Some people, though, when they're standing there singing, they're like doing this kind of like nervous, twitchy movement, in which case I need to ask them to stand still. And there's this sort of irony, because they might be, well, you asked me to move my head and now you're telling me not to move my arms. Because the nature of the movement is different. And it's difficult to explain how it's different, but nervous, twitchy moving isn't like flexible. So the reason I'm giving you this example is sometimes when I meet folks like you who are doing the most, it is a way of distracting themselves from just being okay with themselves, like hanging out, sitting, getting to know themselves. And I think that probably some of the early interactions we had was me trying to understand better what was driving that. And in some ways, it's guiding my line of questioning today. Like, what is it within you that pushes in that? Because you push hard. But I can also testify to the fact that I don't see this as a nervous movement for you, which is why I admire your sort of self-discipline and commitment to it. So that's one thing I've witnessed. I call some folks like perpetual learners, and I don't use that as, I kind of say it pejoratively. Like, it's like the folks that are like always taking a class, always doing something. And there's an aspect of that where I'm like, can you just like relax for a sec? Because you might have everything that you need right here, right now, if you could relax long enough into it. And so I have recognized that there was a season, there have been seasons in my life where I have done that, sort of running around looking to other people for answers, always engaging the next workshop, next class, next thing. And I'm aware of that instinct within me and how I've seen it in others. But to answer your actual question, at this season in my life, the thing that's unsatisfying for someone to hear me say is it's just the next thing that I had to do. You'd love to be, I would love to be able to say, well, this happened and then this, and then it was bam, I had to do this. And there are aspects, there are micro moments, there are glimmers, to use more Martha Beck language, of that. But ultimately, I can't be uncomfortable for very long. And I don't mean uncomfortable, I mean uncomfortable in the mundane or the sort of rote way that my life can take shape. I have now gathered enough energy and momentum around these sort of changes and shifts that I know that when I feel confined, that there's some sort of creative expression that needs to emerge. And I would even argue that I can't not let it emerge at this point. And you and I got more deeply connected at a season in my life where that was really, I was becoming more cognizant of that reality. I think I've always operated like that on a certain aspect. But now I'm like, YOLO. Like, let's go. Like, come on. I got this thing. I got this idea. Like, let's go. I also know from previous experiences that I have the capacity to take an idea. And if it's the right idea and it feels aligned with me, like I can really do the thing. Like I've seen it in the past in my life. Now, in the past, I've done that for things that weren't necessarily aligned and I've burned out. And that's where I have a real awareness around some trepidation around, like, I'm not doing that again. But I also know that if that thing pops up within me and it's like, I think this is a good idea, if I actually sit with it long enough and it sticks, I know I have everything in the tank to like fucking go get the thing. And that's where I trust myself differently in the past. And that's where I recognize that that type of discomfort is the goal. It's the growth. It's the change. It's the transformation. It's the healing. And it is so different than the type of discomfort of like,
Being confined,
Like trying to be still for the purpose of like a whole, keeping myself away from my truth. So it's a culmination of all of the work I had done prior and continue to do. And it also is a symptom of being pretty good with myself, like
Yeah.
pretty okay and not hard on myself in a way. I still have my moments for sure. But yeah, so that was a lot, but it gives you a little bit of context around that.
Yeah. So initially there was some poking in terms of like what is this girl doing when we first started chatting of like is this relentless drive for transformation and avoidance, which would actually be really ironic.
It happens though. I mean, I think it happens now more than ever because there are these, like, especially I think about like the use of psychedelics and things like that.
Oh,
Like
for sure.
it's become so mainstream that I don't know if mainstream, but it's become very popular in the culture. And so you see people engaging in these experiences that do carry the potential to really shift their psyche, to really shift how it is that they move in the world. But they haven't put enough pieces in place prior to that to understand that it also can just be a trip. You know, like it can also just be a distraction from having to confront the realities of everyday life. And so if you're not understanding those things in tandem, you're potentially gonna, I don't know, just like tread water in a way by while you're doing these insane things, you know?
Yeah.
It's not to say that it doesn't turn the dial some. I know that it will, and we all have our process. But I have over the year, I mean, I've been coaching for over 20 years, and I've seen specifically these folks that, and I say this, you know, my intention is to say this without judgment, but these folks that are what I call just perpetual learners, and it feels like an avoidance tactic. Now, I didn't take that from you, but I am always curious when, and I'm saying this with some love, but when I meet someone that does the most, where I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, my intention is never to do the most, right? Like,
I know.
to
But also, I do the most, you know, like I
Yeah.
also
Yeah.
relate to that.
Yeah. But the learning thing is actually really interesting because that actually was, I think, who I was before I started doing the real work because I didn't know what the real work was. And I think a lot of people, I mean, I don't think I know. A lot of people have no idea what real work is in terms of like emotional, psychological work. And they think if they read a self-help book and sometimes even honestly just go to talk therapy that's it. Like that's the work. And that's what I did, literally. I mean, I because of a traumatic accident and you know, when I was 14, I was in therapy off and on like my whole life. So it's not like I wasn't doing therapy. I was in therapy. And I was like learning like a voracious learner, like reading literally everything. And it has served me, like it's informed so much of what I do now. And it was surface. Like listening to podcasts and reading books is always surface level. You're never having an embodied experience. In fact, I just was talking to someone who took my intuition course, and he was telling me I'd read all these books on like the quantum field and that we are consciousness and all of this stuff. And he's like, and I knew that on an intellectual level. Like, yeah, I'd read so many books and all these courses and everything. But when I took your course, it's like all of a sudden I like felt it. And I was like, oh my God.
Body then.
Yeah, when I finally got into actual work, like I found a therapist that did deep work and worked with the subconscious and then created my own means of working with the subconscious. I mean, it's just like, especially in LA, there would be times like for 6 months when I first got there, I had a practice of sitting there and working with my breath and sound and movement. And the whole goal was I had to do it until I cried. And I would do it every day for an hour. I would try, I would, because just so I could feel my fucking emotions, because I was like, you know what? I don't want to stay surface. I want to make sure I'm moving my emotions out. I want to make sure that, because for me, like, I was never comfortable from feeling my emotions growing up. So that was a real practice, and that was fucking work. Like that was so hard to sit there, and like I was so anxious every day I sat down. And I was like, okay, I have to just fucking sit here, move my breath, and make sound until I cry. So I think it's all of that work coupled with the momentum of taking big risks that gives you that sense of like, you seem bold. Where is that coming from? And it's like, it's not staying surface level. And it's so fucking hard. And also I recognize that it's been almost like a full-time job, my own personal awakening.
Which I think is so cool. Like, I think that there's a, again, like if you think about what we're committing our time to in our lives, like, you know, to really actually make that commitment to living your best life. I mean, that sounds so Oprah to say that, but it's a, what better full-time job could you have? I mean, if you have the luxury, that's not the word. If you have the ability to be able to do that, like if you create, if you manifest a life that allows for space with that, like, yes, go. And I think that there isn't also, the two words that come to mind are, this one might sound negative, but I don't mean it, addiction. Like it becomes addictive to, because it feels good. And I, maybe that if there's ever been a good sense of the word addiction, like it, to be addicted to growth and personal healing and transformation, like that is the drug I want to take. But then also the word that's been really, really resonating with me the last 2 years is momentum, that once that momentum gets rolling, you really can't stop that. Like in the best sense, like it gathers speed and it carries you. And there are certain things that will sort of like maybe inhibit along the way, but that's what I mean when I say it was the next thing that I had to do because the momentum was already going and it's like, you know, but you know, I also have had reflected to me during the season of my life. Like a friend just said it. So I just performed, I was telling you earlier, I just performed in Omaha the other day and I lead these immersive sound healing experiences. And at the beginning, I talk to people. Like I talk for like 5 to 10 minutes and I tell them about me and I tell them about why we would be doing what we're doing. And my friend said to me afterward, who was there, she was like, you know, it was so great. She's like, it was just like Davin was up there talking. And it was such a simple thing to say to me. Like it did, you know, but it really resonated with me because that's, I think what she was expressing was just like that seeing of my true self. And that is reflective of how I'm finally feeling. So I'm quote unquote performing, but it doesn't feel like that at all in the moment. Now it is performative. Like I'm standing on a stage and I'm talking with a microphone in my hand and I'm using a voice that I might not use necessarily in, you know, conversation, but it feels so right in terms of my ability to express my honest truth through that space. And so that is the addictive quality. I'm like, I want more of that. Like I want, and this is you going, like, I want my whole day to be intuitive. Like I want to really feel honest and authentic throughout the whole day. And it's a noble, noble endeavor. And I'm glad that we're on that path.
I love that. And it's interesting because like when I look at any really creative person, like people that really are doing, like they have their hands in a lot of things, it only seems to expand more and more,
Yes.
like their creativity. And I think that's, you know, going back to saying like consciousness is just experiencing life through Stephanie and through Davin. And it's like when we do, I guess, personal work or like the work, we start to experience more of love and consciousness and life force moving through us. And that feels so good. So to me, it's like, it was never, I mean, here's the thing. Like I grew up super Christian and I felt like, I had to do certain things to be good,
Yep.
right? Like to be a good person and to be righteous and to be just like Jesus and all the things. And I remember like, it was always reflected to me that I should be just like Jesus and like Mother Teresa. And I would like try so hard to be like them. And that always felt honestly bad in my body.
Yeah.
It felt like effort. And I had to, I mean, for some reason, for me being the oldest, it was really important that I do a lot of volunteer work as a child. So when I was like 10, 11, 12, 13, when a lot of kids were playing, I was doing volunteer work and like helping out at shelters or, you know, taking care of even younger kids at daycare and just doing like volunteer work. And it was never fun to me. It never felt good. Like, and so I think there's such a distinction. It's almost like when I left the construct of Christianity and I started exploring, I mean, for a while I was atheist, then I started exploring just metaphysical concepts and whatever. There was really a time in my life where I felt like I was free to just be whoever the fuck I wanted to be. And during that time, I did a lot of stuff. I dated a lot of people. I drank a lot of booze. I was like completely crazy because I needed to like feel what it felt like to just not always have to be good, you know, and do the right thing. When I started this path of personal transformation, like, I mean, really, it started with deep psychological work. That's really where a lot of my true liberation started and then became like more metaphysical. But my motivation now, other than just not self-abandoning and a deep love and devotion for myself and to follow my inner guidance, is because I feel good. And it's not just a like, oh, I feel good. That was a great day. It's like, what the fuck? I had no idea that I could feel this amazing in my body, that I could take a breath and it almost be orgasmic. Like, I had no idea I could feel this way.
Yeah. And I just want to, like, as you were talking a moment ago and you're talking about volunteering and that not feeling good, could imagine someone being, well, it's not supposed to feel good, right? Like, it's an act, it's not about you, it's like an act of service. But what I want to say on the other side of that is that when those things are aligned with your truth,
Yes.
they feel amazing.
So good.
And that's,
Yes.
that's another like fact of my life that I continue to be surprised by. I mean, I was telling you earlier, I have to give a speech next week, and the actual writing of the speech has eluded me until very recently. And now it's only a few days, and I have to have this thing memorized. And I'm like tortured in some ways by the fact that, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to get this done. But also, it feels so good. Like there's that, because it's that creative energy that feels like I have something really exciting to say here. And I'm very overwhelmed by the work that it is going to take, but I'm very willing to do it because it feels like the next right thing to do and it feels good. And so there's this interesting space and place where things are difficult. They feel hard. You would be like, that is, objectively so hard, but it also feels so good at the same time because it feels aligned with your truth and it feels honest. And that can even be decisions like ending a relationship, right? Where you're like, there is this possibility that, yeah, there will be grief and sadness and tears, but at the same time, it feels like amazing. I actually have a client right now who is going through a divorce much later in life than people typically. I mean, I don't know if there is a typical age, but it's surprising to me that after having been, it's a second marriage for them. They've been married for a long time. They're getting a divorce. But I'm witnessing this happening in her and the communication that she has to me around. It's been very painful. And also, they both are communicating the whole time because they have this like sophistication in their ability to communicate with one another that it feels right. It feels good.
Yeah.
And they're
Yeah.
really like letting each other go through that process. It makes me laugh. It's like the Gwyneth Paltrow, conscious uncoupling, Chris Martin, Gwyneth Paltrow. But I'm watching it from the outside. I'm
But
like,
it's so important.
it's cool. Like,
Yeah.
it's cool to watch where you're like, oh, you're going through something so hard and you're not by, it's not a spiritual bypass. You're not being like, oh, it's fine. It's like you're crying and you're going, yes. And I think that that is what I'm learning to embrace more of in my life. Because anything you do that's really new is going to be so hard. Like anything you do that is actual change is going to be really difficult because that's the only thing that makes it new. That's
Yeah.
the only thing that makes it a big step is that it's something you haven't done before. It's going to be hard. But that hardness feels both scary and exciting and exhilarating and worthwhile.
And right.
Yes, right. Very right.
Yeah, I like that you brought that in because I tend to be so focused on the feeling good and sometimes just being in deep alignment and feeling my own inner support feel so good that I'm not verbally telling other people when I'm talking about it. Like, and it was also really fucking hard.
Yes.
Like, I just forget to say that. So I like that you brought that in because it's true, especially like I had someone contact me the other day saying that he's getting a divorce and it was really shocking to him. And I told him, get ready because divorces are literally some of the most magnetic energy that you can be in. Like, I see people's lives and the way they manifest go crazy right after they have a split. And same with me. I mean, I've been divorced twice. And like, right after I got divorced, like, the way my life exploded in the most magnificent ways.
Yeah. Well, there's a boldness. I mean, I equate it like too. I think about like my mom's death, and like
Yes.
there's a boldness that comes with having lost something so big, that you're like, well, if that didn't kill me, let's go. Like that, it feels like
Right.
that in the moment.
Well, it's like it shakes you loose,
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
Like those pivotal moments are like because we hold on to our construct of identity so tight, and something comes in and disrupts it, which, by the way, that's going to happen to everybody this year. Like 2025 energy is going to be so crazy. And it already is,
It already happens.
exactly. Like,
January
well, just wait.
happened.
It's just going to be like every month is going to be like that. It's going to be crazy. And it's like supposed to be like let it shake you loose because like when we don't grip, when you do move into the loss and the grief and the whatever, like that's where the transformation happens. And then that's also where you do start to listen to yourself more and you start to get clear about like, what is it I really want? And then all of a sudden, like, you don't give as much of a shit. It's like when someone so close to you dies, the things you used to give a shit about suddenly become so small.
Yeah, totally. If you haven't listened to the Anderson Cooper podcast about grief, it's so good. I highly recommend it to anyone. It's really, really good. But he did this interview with Amy and David Sedaris, and she talks about like how after her mom died, like she basically, saw everyone against this like narrative of like, well, you don't know because you haven't lost your mom. And the thing about that is that could take on like a negative sort of slant in terms of your ability to relate to people. But there was a boldness that came with that. And that's what I've experienced in my life too, where it's you'll find out because we all do. But what I feel right now and what I'm aware of is that I'm able to connect with an ability to step into new things because I got through that and I experienced that and I feel disrupted, that by that in a way that allows me to do that. And it doesn't feel good, but yes, it feels great. You know,
Yes,
it's
yeah.
holding both of those things at once, which is a capacity that we expand into.
Let's both share what you would say to someone right now that is on the edge of a bold decision. And that is feeling that tension, that resistance to go big and bold. What would you say to them?
I mean, what I've witnessed in watching other people in this position is that you won't do the thing until you're ready to do it. You're not going to do it until you're ready to do it. But as an outsider, I can say with some confidence that you are likely ready sooner than you believe you're ready. And so there's this capacity that you have to listen to yourself that will increase your self-assuredness that these things happen in the perfect timing. That when you, there's going to be some day that you're like, I can't, I have to. And that is going to happen. But you can speed that up just a little bit by hearing my message that you have within you, everything that you need to accomplish this, to step into this new thing. And it's sooner than right now your thinking mind is telling you it should be. What about you?
I love that. I think the only thing I would add is that what I've found is that when you have a knowing that you're supposed to do something, that your true self, your intuition is guiding you to, your heart is guiding you to do something, the longer you wait in that waiting energy, and the more you start gathering data and opinions from everyone else, the harder it becomes to just take that leap. And the metaphor I always use to explain this to people is like, say, let's say you decided to jump out of an airplane and you're right on the edge and you're like, okay, I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to do it, or I want to do it. And then if you stay there and you don't jump, the long you wait at that edge, the harder it's going to feel to jump. And what I actually have witnessed in so many clients or just people that have come to me for like magic sessions is that they're at this place where their intuition was guiding them to do something a while ago. And now they're shut down and in a place of a little bit of like a shutdown, kind of numb, despair, hopeless energy. And I think that's kind of the body's wisdom of saying like, when we deny ourselves what our heart really longs for, we block our own life force energy. We block our literal energy, like our physical energy, and we become less energized in day-to-day life. We become run down, exhausted, adrenal fatigue, and life stops lighting us up. And sometimes, like when I'm coaching someone or something, if I can lead them to discover what it was, like what was that initial decision? What was your intuition guiding you to do? And then they realize it. And I've done this in my own life. Like when I've been feeling intuitively guided to do something, even if I'm fucking terrified, because I still get terrified, even though I've made big decisions, as soon as I do it, all of that energy is liberated. And I feel, even if I'm scared shitless, at least my energy is moving and I feel alive and lit up. So what I always tell my clients is like, listen, if your intuition is guiding you to something and you are like, even you are just past the line of like, okay, I'm pretty sure I want to do this. I'm going to do this. Just do it as soon as you possibly can. Like, don't fucking wait, because every minute that you wait past that point where you've decided on some level, even if it's so small, you start losing energy. And it starts getting harder and harder. And something that I just told my students in my intuition class the other day is like, if you're in that point where you're like, yeah, I've been knowing I should do something for a while and I've been dragging my heels, I really love Mel Robbins' 5-4-3-2-1 rule with this, where if you get a burst of inspiration or a sudden like just surge of energy, or sometimes you can actually facilitate this by doing a hard workout or doing something really creative. But you just get a little burst of energy, just say 5-4-3-2-1 and then do it like right then. Like, don't wait, like send the text or like whatever it is to move into that decision. Do it while you're at a peak of energy, because as soon as that drops off, it'll feel hard again.
I heard like one time that this is loosely related, but I heard one time a meditation teacher say that ever he felt compelled in any way, shape, and form to be generous, he had a practice of doing it right away.
Oh yeah, I love that.
And I think that's sort of like a subtle way of practicing some of these behaviors is like, because you never regret generosity. Like generosity, especially like just giving something that you have the capacity to give, it always feels good, you know? But so often we talk ourselves out of it. And so there are these small ways in which we can benefit others and also cultivate this capacity within ourselves to be able to listen to those nudges and those urges. The last thing I want to say too is be careful who you surround yourself by.
Fuck yes.
Because if you're surrounded by people that are reiterating the narrative that that's not crazy, that's a wild idea. I hope that works out for you. Yeah, that's going to make it a
Hope
lot
that
harder.
works out for you.
I mean, how many times we all heard that, you know, like
Yeah.
good luck, ooh, you're doing that, you know, like that is a recipe to talk you out of making the choice. So honestly, find people that will be supportive of your decisions.
Yeah, and if you don't have someone like that, then don't, literally just don't tell anyone
Yeah,
and
right.
just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so true. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. If you enjoyed it, be sure to go to the new podcast called Conversations on Expansion with Stephanie Zeller and Davin Youngs. You can search that wherever you listen or check out the show note links below. You definitely want to go over to that show and follow it and subscribe so that you don't miss future episodes. There's going to be some long form and short form episodes over there. Also, if you enjoy this episode and you have a friend that would benefit, don't forget to pass this episode along to them. We all need help when making big, bold decisions. And I'm sure if you are a listener, you have some very courageous friends that take big, bold leaps all the time and would love this episode. There are also a couple of past episodes with Davin and I if you want to check those out. Those are also in the show notes below. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. Until next time.